This paper is also co-authored by Evangelos Mirlis, who is working with me here, and he has done most of the work on the emulsions and also on simulation on color rendering and other things that I will refer to. If we start with yesterday when you or when you went to the reception on Tuesday evening, you saw a hologram or several holograms by Inaki, and one of them in particular was a blue vase or a white vase with blue decoration. If you had a look at that hologram, as you know, it was created by a pseudo-color technique, but it represents what we need to achieve in holography for direct recording. The reason his hologram is so good and so low noise is he only used red light, red laser light, and then swell and shrink the emulsion to create shorter wavelengths. And that creates an image that has very, very low noise because there has never been any scattered recording in it using blue light, for example. Of course, this process is very difficult, and also it doesn't really have any direct relation to the colors of the object. He could as well, instead of the blue decoration, have a green one, and it would look equally similar. So in this paper, I am only talking about color holograms that are actually recorded of an object and reproduced as where the color rendering is as accurate as possible. What the goal is here that the human eye should not see a difference between the object put behind a clean piece of glass, and next to it we put the hologram, and then you ask people to say which one is the object, which is a hologram. When you get a 50-50 distribution, of you have reached the goal. Okay, so these other holograms that Inaki gave a very good presentation yesterday is of course a very beautiful technique for artists to work. But of course, it's not really what we are looking at when we look at recording holograms of objects. In this category, we of course also now include all the computer-generated holograms. For example, the ones that you either record with any type of photographic input, digital or not, into the hologram when you record it, and then transfer it digitally to a print like this Yola, or completely computer-generated holograms, full color. Of course, in that case, you can't say anything about color rendering because there is no original object to compare it with. So that is on the borderline, of course. But of course, it's an extremely important application and technique. If you look at the first holograms that were recorded in the 60s, for example, the left one here is a first transmission hologram. It was actually a slide, two-dimensional slide recorded in a hologram. And the one on Lean Lubinko is one of the example of color reflection holograms recorded in the early 60s or mid-60s. And these, of course, was just to show that there is a possibility. The right one is only recorded with two colors, red and green. In the beginning, what we had was holograms recorded, and this is something we discussed before, a multi-layer now, but in the beginning, there were no material except dichromated gelatin that could record blue. So what Kubota did in 1986 was to combine an AGFA red sensitive plate for a red recorder, and the green and blue was recorded in the DCG plate. Sandwich them together, get a fantastic high-quality hologram, and that actually proved that color holography can really be achieved. But in this case, it was in a sandwich. Again, a very complicated technique to do it in a more direct way. This probably is one of the best color holograms recorded as of that date. When Slavish introduced a panchromatic emulsion. It was an experimental emulsion that I got from Sobolev, and that me and Vukicevic were working on in Strasbourg. And we did a lot of tests there to see if we can record in a single layer a high quality hologram. And what we used was different test of, but also this was the first object we recorded. As you see there, we actually put a blue background, which is very rare that people who make holograms and to prove holography, they use always a red or green background. But we wanted to have a blue to show, and we wanted to have white in the hologram to show that we could record these type of images. Chantier in France have developed an ultimate emulsion, which is also extremely fine grain. And here, this is an emulsion that you can't buy. It's certainly, he produces emulsion, monochrome emulsions that he sells, but not really the high quality color emulsion. So that he used for himself to record holograms like this, which is also very high quality recording. Unfortunately, he tried to avoid to use any blue or blue backgrounds or white backgrounds. He preferred to have primarily red and green, which will, of course, make a very nice looking hologram. So let's now see with what we need to obtain a color hologram. First, we need to look at what wavelengths to use. Second, what type of setup. Thirdly, what type of material, and also what light source should be used to illuminate. So these are the four factors. All of them are extremely important. And yesterday and on Tuesday, we discussed a lot of about recording materials, so I'm not going to cover that here. I refer to the previous paper by Evangelos. If you look at the laser wavelengths for holograms, most holograms are now recording called the ones we make here with three wavelengths. But what we did a few years ago was to create a computer program where we actually looked at what should the wavelengths be and how many do we need. And this was something that Evangelos Mirlis did, who is my PhD student. We all work with the Macbeth test target. That's another thing that people in holography seem to avoid to do, either because they are not sure if their holograms are good or not, but definitely that is what the first person recording any color hologram should use this type of objects to start with. Here you have saturated colors at the bottom of it and mixed colors and a black and white strip there at the bottom. We were running with this program between 3 and 300 wavelengths. And somewhere located between 400 and 700 nanometer. And what we did is was we wanted to see how many light sources are needed to minimize the error we make between a given patch on this. So for example, if we use, for example, a color here, that we measure in a certain type of light with a spectrophotometer and get the XY coordinates in a chromaticity diagram. Then we go the same thing with the hologram and see if we obtain exactly the same values. And if you don't do that, there is an error, so the eye will see a slightly different color. And of course, this is nothing peculiar with holography. It's default to everything. You even color photographs are not at all identical to a test target. You always have problem with color reproduction. If you look at this graph that was a result of the simulation, you said, see that it's an exponentially declining curve, which the more wavelengths we go, the finer the smaller the error will become, but between 4 and 5 or so seems to be optimum to record it. So we need 4 to 5 laser wavelengths to assure a minimal color rendering and error. So 3 laser wavelengths will never get a perfect recording. And also it's interesting to see that this is not generally identical for all wavelengths. So if you look at these two, These graphs here represent the corresponding patch in the test target. So as you see here, when we have three wavelengths, we have a very large error in this one for a patch, very, very small in this one, for example. And the overall error of this was what we were looking for when we plot that graph. If you add in a fourth wavelength, you now see that the overall error is much, it's lower, but we still could have some particular patch that this one is very badly reproduced. And if you go on like this, these will eventually drop down to zero with infinite amount of wavelengths, or like 100 or so probably. Here you can see another problem. The left one is a photo taking of the test target illuminated with RGB laser light, and the right one is a corresponding color hologram. The left one actually, with these three wavelengths, represent what the hologram should really look like, because a hologram will only see these three wavelengths when you record it. But so this is also different from the target itself. So just put the target in front of three laser wavelengths. It doesn't look identical to have, for example, a normalized white light or daylight on it. So all these things are problems we need to face. Most of our tests are the Dennis-Yuk recording technique. Of course, it doesn't have to be, because you can do transfer. You can do a master and copy it into a second hologram. But most of our are using the Dennis-Yuk, because first of all, you get 180 field of view in both dimension and full parallax. So if you are looking to make very realistic images, that's the way to go, because as soon as the image disappears, if you don't see it from all directions, then you know that this is not a realistic not a realistic reproduction of an object. This is from our lab here at Center for Modern Optics. We have two rooms. One is a laser room here, where we have the three lasers that combine the light. The light from these three lasers with dichroic mirrors that were shown in the other, maybe you need to see. So we have the krypton, neodymium, YAG, and argon. They go through the beam combiners that add, first the red go through, and we add the green, and we add the blue to white laser light that goes into another room where we do the recording. So here you see the white laser beam going through the hole in the wall. And here is on the other side, where we have a huge table on which we record our holograms. And here you can actually see where our elephant test target is sitting, with a white painted plate above in white laser light. Then we will, of course, talk a little about computer-generated holograms. It's not possible to generate a Lippmann plate with a computer with the interference pattern that you need. So mostly it is connected with either holographic stereograms, or you have now the technique of generating holograms pixel by pixel and print them as an example of both what Zebra Imaging is doing and the Yola technique. There again, you can look between transmission and reflection, and transmission can also be done with these techniques. But as you know, as soon as you move up and down, the colors change, which I don't think is a technique of interest when you want to have absolute perfect color reproduction. So that's why the reflection holography is being used. As we have already said that, and I'm not going to talk about emulsions now, because that was a topic of the previous paper and other papers in this conference. These are the three potential materials for holography in color: fine, ultra-fine-grained silver halide, photopolymer, or dichromated gelatin. Kubota, for example, have done some excellent work also in panchromatic dichromate that has been red sensitized, and so has Jeff Blythe. Now we come to the light source we need to illuminate them. And this is very critical for color hologram, because you need to decide when you record the hologram what is going to be used to view it. So the color temperature of the source has an influence on the color rendering. And the source size, of course, determines the image resolution, which is not unique to color holograms. It's to all holograms. But there is another interesting things here. with the reference angle, which is not of importance to monochrome hologram, but we need to guess exactly the right angle that was used for recording the hologram, assuming there is no shrinkage or swelling of the emulsion. That means that we need to have that to get the right color reproduction. For example, if you have a color hologram and record it in more, replay it like this, it goes from green, orange or red through white and then to green. So you need to be exactly at this angle you used. What we are looking now is, we talked about it yesterday, and Craig Neuswanger also mentioned about LEDs and OLEDs and other things. We are now investigating these type of sources for also to use for large format reflection holograms. And all of you know what improvements we can get with this: long lifetime and small size, high durability, and very little energy used, very no infrared or UV output in the beam, no printout or heat that will destroy the hologram. And all this, but, and also if we can actually match the three or four, whatever we will be using for color hologram, exactly these wavelengths in the LED or source, so if we just hit what has been recorded, we reduce all the extra noise that is created from a white halogen light. When you hit all the other parts from the spectrum are hitting the plate, creating noise. So a hologram illuminated with a perfect match of wavelengths from the LED with the recording will give extremely nice looking holograms. And the people as of today that works in, this is just the most important ones, I think. There are some others, I'm sure, that is not on this list, that are also recording color holograms or in a more consistent way. We, of course, which we have been for a long time, color holographic in United Kingdom. Dai Nippon in Japan has done a lot on photopolymer. Yola, of course, as you will hear in the next paper, is heavily involved in it. We'll have also a paper from Lund Institute of Technology by Sven-Göran Pettersson later today, or yes, in the afternoon. And then we have Ultimate Holography France, Chanté, record holograms in France. Zebra Imaging in United States have been involved in a long time producing color holograms on photopolymer material. And then also related to Yola is XYZ Imaging in Canada, is part of the development of all these silver halide printing machines and processing. If you now look at Zebra, they have been working with DuPont's photopolymers and still are, I think, but they may also have started looking at silver halide for some applications. They have, this is based on Mike Klug's work at MIT some time ago, where he developed this technique. And you probably have heard about this in other presentations in San Jose or so, where papers have been presented on this technique. So they make them normally in tiles by 60 by 60 centimeter and then put them together to make larger holograms. I don't know if that has changed or if that still is what they do or if they print. It depends on how large format photopolymer DuPont can produce. Here are some examples of their work, and you may have seen Craig brought some of these maps, which are extremely nice, showing a view from above or in full color, where you actually have full parallax, so you can walk around and look down. You can even see different cars with different colors in the parking lot there. Another example of their work was a portrait of Steve Benton that was on display during the memorial of Steve Benton a few years ago in United States. Color holographic in London are doing also primarily transmission holograms, where they combined, and they have done posters for movies and things like that. And this particular one, I believe, is from a movie. I don't know which one it is, but it's one that you... So they have had them in movie theaters to promote movies, and many other applications in advertising. Dai Nippon in Japan has worked exclusively on to mass produce color hologram on DuPont's panchromatic emulsion. They have two different images. One they call true image, which is more for decorative holograms, and secure image, which is in the security business to make full color security holograms onto photopolymer. One example of their more decorative hologram was this watch from Franklin Mint, where they incorporated a full color hologram of a dragon in the eye of the Golden Dragon collector watch. Yola, which you will hear in the next paper, and about this technique, as you have seen, I don't know if you have seen PIM here, we have a room, and also in the breaks, you can come and look at that. You have seen the hologram at the entrance, and many of the holograms here. So I'm not going to talk much about that. All I will mention is that, again, the material is extremely important. So Yola was forced to get to develop a new film with finer grain, and it is called Cefra S, which is developed and produced in outside Moscow. And this film is the ones you see here of these holograms that we show are all produced on that type of film. Now we can talk about the future of color holography. So this is sort of what I see, and I want like your input also on it if you think I am right or wrong. But first of all, we need to find how many wavelengths we need and to see. Unfortunately, we have not yet been able. Only Kubota has done a test with four wavelengths, although I have never seen a hologram recorded, but it may only have been a simulation. Anyhow, so we probably need to switch to four wavelengths if we want to have better color reproduction, and eventually five. We know for sure if we are using silver halide, they have to be less than 10 nanometer. so that's something we have to continue to work on. The virtual color image behind the holographic plate, as of today, it represents the most realistic looking image of an object that can be recorded today. The only difference now is that you may get distortions because of blurring from the spotlight, which make them not exactly right. You may also not have perfect color rendition. In addition, you may have some other problems with the image that will not look identical to the object. One thing I didn't mention, but was mentioned by a paper in Strasbourg, where they developed a computer simulation of adding one wavelength after the other to see what that effect has on the speckle. And of course, the more images you put in, more recordings you do, every time you get an average of the speckle pattern, so they will overlap slightly differently, and eventually they will be erased. So in what you may have seen in color hologram, you hardly see any moiré patterns, nor do you see any strange things happening on the plate. So the more wavelengths we put in, the more clean the plate will look, free of any Newton rings or other things that happen often in monochrome, single wavelengths recorded hologram. And of course, if we stick to Denisuk hologram for recording objects and so, then the extensive field of view adds, of course, to the illusion of looking at the real object. So the wavefront can actually recreate the light scattered from the object during the recording of the color hologram. When everything works well, spotlight, material, the amount of wavelengths used. So in conclusion, with this technique being perfected, we think that directly recorded color aurals have many application in displaying unique and expensive artifacts. Of course, also commercial applications and point of purchase display, advertising, jewelry windows, of course, where they remove everything in the evening is, of course, one immediate possibility to show all their products continuously in a window. Also in airports and everywhere else, you don't need to put any expensive stuff out there, just the holograms, because you are not allowed to touch anything anyhow. So why do you need anything, objects there, when you can get exactly the same illusion to the viewer outside the shopping window? And color computer-generated hologram will, of course, have also a very large impact on what is going to happen, in particular in the field of rapid product prototyping, computer art, and 3D visualization, since we can generate images of non-produced objects that may, in the future, be developed. So you can look at them in full 3D, in full color, long before you have produced them, and if they look attractive or not. And thank you for your attention. Any questions? Evangelos, you can. Craig.
It's a comment. This is a little anecdote from when we first saw Kubota's work in Montreal. A group of us were looking at it in wonder. Most of us, we were all familiar with the situation. We were all looking at the hologram, and we noticed that most of the laypersons walking through the exhibit walked by the Kubota's hologram without a second thought. They looked at the rainbow holograms and they, oh, this is wonderful, look at how strange it is over here. They were enamored with the artifacts that we try to get rid of. And Kubota's hologram was a doll. It wasn't a hologram of a doll, it was just the doll. And that was kind of enlightening at the time. So to say, the better we get at it, the less people will notice the process.
Yes, but I mean, that's what you are after, really. I think so. That's what you are after, really. I mean, if you look at acoustic wave reproduction, nobody will say that this sound reproduction of a concert that you listen to at home is too good. It looks too realistic. It's like we were sitting in the car. It needs to look like Edison wax reproduction. I don't believe that making it identical, that's absolutely the goal of all imaging reproduction techniques from the beginning of photography. You went into color photography and so on. So I think that it's just wrong to say that people would not like holograms that are identical to the object. I know people sometimes say that what is the purpose of making a hologram if it is identical to the object? Then you can say, what is the purpose of listening to music if it's identical to sit in a concert hall and listen to it? It's exactly the same argument. Anyhow, there was Markov had a question.
Hans, you didn't mention the earlier work done on the selection of the lines. So there was a work done by Boris Torohana in 72 when he first used xenon.
Yes.
Also extensive work done by Paul Hubel. Unfortunately, Paul left the field of holography, but Paul really looked in very carefully, both when he was in Cambridge or Oxford and then with MIT, what lines should be used. And there was a great work done by
him. Yes. What I did here was pick a few things from the history. If you read my other, where I have the history of, in other papers, I have all these in the list of references. So they are in other of my papers. Kevin.
Just a comment on wavelength selection. I'd like to suggest that if you pick the right wavelengths, I think that three wavelengths might be sufficient and even better than more wavelengths. If you look at Thornton's paper, you'd be familiar with, of the 70s, where he took what's now called the three prime colors, the 450, 540, and 610, he found that the color rendering from those three was better than any other set of wavelengths, even if you have a continuous spectrum.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you add an extra, for example, 488, that actually reduces. So it may be if you pick just the right three wavelengths.
Yes, but that assuming that you have more broadband wavelengths. Hesselink, Hesselink showed that you could with three wavelengths get sometimes it was, and you see from our simulation with three, we could get one of these patches completely wrong. And that to reduce all of them, I don't see, we can ask Evangelos if you have any comment on that because you did all the simulations. But anyhow, I think we may discuss this later because we have to go. I think, did you have a question? Or no, Michelle. And, no, Evangelos, you can. Yes.
I mean, the color work?
Yeah. I think so.
Well, anyway, the color is in the mind because when you are looking at things during the day, when the sun is low in the morning or in the afternoon, it usually looks much better than when it's high. So, I mean, the problem of rendering the true color is very complex because you take an object and you don't see him the same in a room with a lamp outside with the sun when it's so cloudy. So it's very complex. So I think you gave a very good abstract, but we could discuss this much longer.
Yes, of course, yeah.
And if you take many lasers, the problem is the coherence length of each of them is maybe not the same as the next one. So this was the case with the xenon laser of Turucano. The coherence length was not very deep.
No, you need also long coherence, of course. Yeah.
I would think the most obvious killer application is portraiture. So the question is, how many wavelengths does it take to do good skin?
That we have not really looked at. You have seen some what has been done far, like by Zebra, for example, our portraits. That's what we get. But if you look at a Lippmann photograph, like my portrait, there is a huge difference in color rendering when you have infinite amount of wavelengths, like the full spectrum. So you to rendering the color of the human flesh or the skin is very, very difficult. It's very complex. I think we can only take one more question from Lung, and then I want to go over to you.
I was very impressed by the excellent result of pseudocolor reflection holograms. But I believe we should, in the future work, we should think about the combination of pseudocolor holograms and the holograms with different lasers.
Yes, of course. Anyhow, I think we have to proceed now, and there will be more question after David Radcliffe's paper, which is related to this, so we can take more questions like that. So please, David, and we will... we need to get back to your session.